This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The shortage of organ donors is an urgent health crisis. More than 100,000 people in the U.S. are currently listed as waiting for an organ transplant. Many will die before receiving one. Others endure that long wait. Sometimes it lasts years. The current system in the U.S. relies on convincing people to register as organ donors, but that doesn't seem to be working all the time. Are you an organ donor? Why or why not? Are you sure you're an organ donor? Many people think that they are, but their wishes aren't clear. Have you or someone you love benefited from an organ donation? Call in, tell us your story. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Clarissa Thompson. She is a senior communications coordinator for the Texas Organ Sharing Alliance. Michelle Ramirez is a public education coordinator with Donate Life Texas. And April Medellin is a development manager for Transplants for Children. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Clarissa Thompson, can you tell me why, what is the state of the crisis? If we have a healthcare crisis with the lack of organs, how bad is it?
Sure. Thank you first for having us here. You know, there is a critical need. There is an extreme shortage of organs available for transplant. Currently, there's 115,000 people nationally waiting for an organ, 10,000 right here in our state of Texas. Every 10 minutes, a new name is added to the list, and every day, 22 people will die, never receiving that life-saving organ transplant. So there's a huge need, but it's really easy to fix, and that's people signing up to be not just organ donors, but organ, eye, and tissue donors onto the Donate Life Texas State Registry.
So what says this pause right there? Tell me what that means. Not just organ donors, but organ, eye, and tissue donor.
Correct. One person can help up to 75 lives, 8 lives through organ donations, which is like your heart, your liver, your lungs, and so forth, as well as up to 75 through cornea and tissue donations. And our criteria is different among all three, but it's simple to do. You simply sign up when you renew your license or go online at DonateLifeTexas.org to make that gift possible.
Do I have to consent each time, before I say, yes, I want to be an organ donor, yes, I want to be an eye donor, yes, I want to be a tissue donor? Does that work that way?
No, it's just one time. Usually when you go renew your license, they would simply ask you, do you want to be an organ donor? And it blankets you for all three donations. Online, if you do it at DonateLifeTexas.org, you can actually specify. So maybe you're not sure yet about one of those donations. You want to learn more. There's a lot of facts on that website, and you can blanket yourself for all of them as well in one stop.
But there are a lot of people, you make it sound so easy. It sounds mm-hmm. so natural. I mean, you're dead. You're not going to use them anymore. And there are people out there that can really benefit from your organs. Do people talk themselves out of becoming an organ donor? I mean, what's the internal monologue that's going on inside? We'd love to hear from listeners who have concerns about this. And why aren't you an organ donor? Maybe you have a perfectly good reason that, you know, and let us hear it. 210-614-8980. Michelle Ramirez at Donate Life Texas. There are a lot of myths that people have when it comes to when they consider becoming an organ donor.
Absolutely. One of the greatest myths is that when you get to the hospital that they're not going to work as hard to save your life, that they are going to know you're a donor, and so they already have someone waiting for that organ, and that is not true. The same team, it's not even the same team.
So there are a lot of safeguards that are in place to make
Absolutely.
Sure that we don't have these vultures hovering
Absolutely.
Over the operating mm-hmm. table, ready to swoop in on you. So
Absolutely.
Let's talk about that, since that is such a dominating myth.
So when you come to the hospital, the doctors, your hospital care team, they're going to do everything that they can to save your life. That is their concern, your patient care. Only after someone has died, either by brain death or because their heart has stopped, will a team be called in. And it's a totally separate team. And those are called organ procurement organizations. They're called in. And only then can they know if you're a donor or not. This is totally separate from the hospital, totally separate from your care team.
And Clarissa.
Yeah, so I actually work for the local organ procurement organization, Texas Organ Sharing Alliance, and we have the team. We are that team that comes in. We are separate from the hospitals. So we are the federally designated organization to help those families who had consented for their loved one to donate or their loved one already registered. And when their loved one registered, that's why we're advocating for that, because when their loved one does that, they lift that burden off their family of having to make that decision. And that's the greatest gift they can give their family in making things easier and making that gift possible.
April Medellin, your organization, Transplants for Children, you're the development manager there. What is that? Is this a separate issue of organs for children? Talk about that.
Sure. One thing we do is we connect the children with other people that are going through the similar experience they are. We financially support them throughout their journey. But one of the pillars that we like to talk about that we offer at Transplants for Children is advocacy. And what we like to do is inform people at all of our events about the importance of registering for organ donation. It's important to them for them to see that an organization that supports them post-transplant is also encouraging people to make that easy decision to sign up. Like you said, once they're gone, they don't need it. And I've been on that end of the waiting side. My son was listed for 7 months, and we had our bags packed and at the door waiting for that phone call of that gift of life.
Do you mind me asking, what organ, what was the situation?
His was a liver, need for liver. And he was at that 18-year-old age where he was transitioning from pediatric to adult. And so many times, the adult wait list is much longer. And so as y'all mentioned, many of these people don't get that opportunity to save their lives because the wait was too long or the need, the supply wasn't there. They list in other regions that have shorter wait lists. And it's really just our mission to get people to be informed about how easy it is. And we went the living donor side simply because the availability and the time we were chasing wasn't there for us.
What does that mean, living donor?
Some organs, liver is one of them, regenerate. So we were fortunate enough to have his father step up as a living liver donor, and 52% of his lobe was removed and placed into Jeremy, and within 5-6 weeks, it grew back to full size, and they are both living with a shared organ. So they
did an operation on the husband, on the father.
Correct.
They were able to extract portions of his liver while he was alive. Didn't have
Correct.
To wait for it. And they were able to surgically implant that into your son, and now they're both benefiting from that.
Absolutely.
So how do I get involved in that? Maybe someone could use part of my liver, you know?
Yeah, and kidney donations. Everybody has two functioning kidneys, and you can live with just one. So there are other areas of need for living donation. It's definitely a miracle shared. It's something that two people can share very special recovery, and that gift of life can be given while still living as well.
Yeah, well, I'm not drinking anymore, so my liver's not getting the workout that it used to.
We tell Jeremy, my son was 18 when he was transplanted, and we tell him you have a 44-year-old liver inside you, so take care of it.
Take care of it. But, okay, yeah. So we're going to talk more about organ donations and transplants, talk more about the myths, talk about the needs. I want to hear stories from our community. This is a marvelous gift that you can give someone, a family can give someone. It does help people in so many ways. We're going to be talking about that this afternoon. We invite your calls. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The gift of life, organ donation. It's hard, comes at a hard time for people. You may have lost a loved one, but then think about how that loss can help others. We're talking about how those organs can go on to provide the gift of life to so many. The organs, the eyes, the tissues, the It is a legacy of life. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about this afternoon. We're going to try and bust some myths, a lot of myths about organ donations. And also, let's get some callers on the air. Robert. And Robert, welcome to The Source, sir. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on a personal story. My driver's license, the first time around I grabbed it, I didn't really know anything about organ donation. I was scared, and there's probably just a lot of misunderstanding happening. I was a very young guy at that time. And it wasn't until I renewed my license recently that I went ahead and made myself an organ donor, just because it after being more mature, I kind of realized that it was better to do that. But you know, it took something happening like that for me to realize that I could be helping somebody out. And if something had happened to me, you know, all these, I guess, healthy organs would have gone to waste. But I know that in other countries, this is not an option. It is an option. It's an opt-out type of option. So in America, I know it's an opt-in process, which makes this conversation really interesting. So I don't know. I'm glad that there's a myth dispelling conversation going on, but I also want to know why it's not an automatic process in America, if anybody really knows why.
Robert, thank you for the call. We appreciate that, and thank you for becoming an organ donor. Let's go to Clarissa Thompson. She's the Senior Communications Coordinator for the Texas Organ Sharing Alliance. Spain is the world's leader in organ donations, mm-hmm. and they have a very aggressive policy of saying, you're an organ donor unless you tell us otherwise.
Yeah, in theory, you know, it sounds like it's a good idea. You know, just have everybody signed up already as an organ donor, and then they can opt out. But in reality is, you know, it really takes away that decision from the people making that decision. It's a gift that someone gives out of their own self, an altruistic gift, to make that possible. And we actually, our consent rates, in fact, Texas is one of the fastest growing registries here in the nation. We're second in the nation, actually. About 51% of Texans are already registered. And so we did look at the possibility of that. I know that was brought up not too long ago. But actually, in looking at our numbers, our consent rates of families saying yes when we approach them, or those people that are signing up, if we were to continue on that trajectory, we would actually do better staying in the process that we're currently in, where you opt in versus opting out.
I believe 78% of Americans say that they would donate their organs,
mm-hmm.
but they just—it's an issue of getting them to make their donations, their intentions clear. We don't want to, and so how do we do that?
I think it's making sure that they understand that it's easy to do. You know, they simply have to sign up on their license and, of course, talk to their family, but their family doesn't have to worry about making that decision. I think a lot of people don't sign up because they think their family's going to have the ultimate decision, and that's not the case. By signing up here in Texas, it's first-person consent. You lift that burden off your family, and you can help save lives. And it's those people. It's not just a number. It's those people that receive the gifts. We know several men, women, and children. I, myself, have had two family members who have been on the receiving end. One from a TOSA donor, and it was just amazing. He was on his deathbed, and he was given several years of extra life because someone made that gift, that simple action.
There's an event this weekend you're going to be at. What's going to happen? Do you want to talk about that, Michelle Ramirez?
Yes, we are going to be at the Pride Festival and Pride Parade, and we're going to be spreading our message and our mission, you know, to save lives through organ donor registration. We want people to understand how easy it is to do, and they can be a hero to someone that's waiting. You know, this is a personal decision, and so that's why we want to respect everyone wherever they are. If they have any questions, we want to answer those questions. And I think by having our system the way it is, you know, where you personally register and sign up and decide to donate, it protects the integrity of donation. And that's one of the myths out there, and so much fear that people are able to get on the waiting list and pay for it, or if they're celebrity, or, you know, they're able to get an organ quicker. So that's why we want to dispel all those myths.
So, but at the festival, Pride Fest, it's this weekend,
yes.
And there's going to be at the table, you can go get your license scanned. What does that mean?
We have what's called a scan app where people can bring their driver's license. We can scan it. They can be added to the registry. They sign up there. They can gain information.
And that's it.
It's a decision you make now, and hopefully you don't have to think about it anymore.
Okay, let me go to the phone lines. A lot of callers here. Lalo, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just want to say I am a kidney donor myself. I donated my kidney to my mom back in November 13, 1998. And she's still doing great after physicals of just making sure everything's good. She's doing great. I'm doing great. I also do my annual physicals. The doctor says I'm good to go, so we're both good. Thank God for that. I still do my softball, basketball, whatever. Do my sports. I feel great. She feels great.
You're now running on one kidney. How long has it been since the procedure? And you're not feeling any sort of lag or nothing. You're totally 100%.
That is correct. I still push my body and try to keep healthy, and my kidney has no problem with it.
All right, Lalo, thank you for that call. We appreciate that. Let me ask, so April Medellin, you're with Transplants for Children, and kidneys, is that something that we need to, that children typically want in demand for them?
Yes, it's definitely the highest organ need. We see that here. We serve all of Texas, and the majority of our clients have the kidney need.
And so, but it's not always like, so Lalo was able to donate to his mother.
Correct.
And so they have the familial, you know, chain, genetic advantage there. But is that always the way it works?
No. We've had teachers that have given to students. I mean, you'd be surprised at the stories. There's even people, surprisingly, heroically, that are at a list at the hospital saying, if someone needs and I match, complete strangers willing to give a kidney for a chance of expanding the years in someone's life. We have a lot of repeat kidney. I did a TV interview yesterday with a young man that's 3 years into his kidney transplant, and he's being relisted waiting for his second transplant. Some of them have 2, 3, even 4.
Because so, what, it doesn't take?
They could have got it early on. They could have had one transplant kidney. They could need two. Rejection happens, unfortunately. The meds that they take are very hard on other organs. My son is a liver transplant recipient, and the anti-rejection meds that he takes could ruin his kidneys in the future, and it's something they warn us about. But, you know, we would take an 8 to 10 more years any day as opposed to none. So really, this gift is hope for people to continue to live on.
Okay, let me go to another caller, and Jillian is on the line. Jillian, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you've gone through kidney transplants yourself.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is my third kidney transplant, so I had very high antibodies, which made it very difficult to find a matching donor.
And this is because you were born with damaged kidneys? Is that right?
Yeah. They say it was called renal dysplasia, which is when one kidney doesn't grow and it transfers over to the other kidney, so it damages both kidneys. So it was at the age of 6 years old that I had received my first kidney transplant from my mother. Doctor said it should have lasted, but as your last caller said, the medications are very important. And in fact, the surgery apparently is simple to do, but prescribing the right medication is even harder to do, especially when you're, you know, a young six-year-old boy, you know.
And today, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great today. I'm not on dialysis anymore. The nine-hour week while spending on dialysis turned into every single day of not feeling well. It went smoothly. I had to be in the hospital for 2 weeks. And, you know, during those 11 years, I would always ask the doctor, am I going to get a kidney? And they would say to me, yes, but I would prefer if you ask family members if they can donate a kidney to you. And I'd always respond to the doctor, have you ever tried asking a family member for an organ? It's a lot harder than you think. And I got a cadaver. It matched perfectly. Person was the same height, same age, everything. And it went very, very smoothly. As of today, my creatinine, which really monitors how well your kidney is doing, is 1.0, which is a fantastic creatinine to have. And my nephrologist has said, you know, this kidney should last you the rest of your life because of the new medications they're always coming up with.
Wow. So I'm so happy to hear that. But I want to talk about, so 11 years you were on dialysis and uncertainty of if you're ever going to get that organ. There was no certainty that was going to happen. What about the wear and tear on your psyche and being in that place of not knowing and having to endure, you know, to survive with the dialysis?
Oh, it was extremely difficult, especially when you're a young man like myself and you're going in there with much older patients. So it kind of wears on you there where you think, am I ever going to get out of this place? And you know, sometimes you would have a nice technician, some days you didn't. Sometimes they put you on late, which would mean you didn't make plans for that day. Schooling was particularly very difficult for me. Now that I have a kidney transplant, I'm clearer thinking, and while on dialysis, it clouded your thoughts, and as you said, the psyche was completely torn down. There was zero confidence in myself, and it was, you know, my life consisted of school twice a week and then driving back and forth to dialysis, which can be wearing on itself. It was difficult, to say the least. And there is a huge, huge change when you get a kidney transplant. That's why I always try to encourage people, you should be an organ donor. If not now, put it on your license, you know, because really there is a shortage of kidneys. And a lot of times these technicians would have misconceptions about how people ended up on dialysis. They would think, oh, this person probably didn't eat right, or this person probably did drugs, but that's simply not true. It's just how it happens, you know?
All right, Julian, thank you so much for calling in. Your story spoke volumes. I really do appreciate your participation. And so let me go to April Medellin. So you're with Transplants for Children. Julian's story, I'm sure that's not unusual.
That's correct. And, you know, with kidney, there is dialysis as an option. With liver, when they're in end stage, that's not an option. So they're literally chasing the clock, watching their MELD score, and realizing that the way their gradual numbers are increasing, that they will be taken off the list and not eligible, too sick to transplant. So for them, time is of essence, right? So with the increase in registration numbers, it really does give the hope that the perfect match will be found sooner and in time. So when we talk about the psyche and how it affects you, you know, you keep fighting, but at some point you start to lose hope and you start to question, is it going to come in time? I'm yellow. My eyes are yellow. My stomach is bloated. I can't get out of bed anymore. And that desperation means so much. Time matters, you know. So these decision-making factors need to be talked about in schools at every opportunity. We partner at Texas Transplants for Children with TOSA, Texas Organ Sharing Alliance, with Donate Life in every opportunity to promote this, because they are hope. You know, these children, when they look at us and say, am I going to get that in time, or am I going to die? We have to look at them and say, we're making every effort to spread this message, put it on every flyer, put it on every newsletter. Social media can help. All these stories from your callers are so appreciated. Talk about it, share it, profile it, because your stories are moving. You're heroes.
And so many times people like Julian, they get that Charlie Brown with the football situation. They think they're going to get the organ. They get their hopes up, and then it doesn't match or something else happens. Yeah. It's very complex. The more organs that we can get into the system, the better odds we have for helping people like Julian. So many people are out there waiting right now at this minute for an organ that can save their life. Make the decision to become an organ donor. And think about the gift of life that you're passing along. We're going to continue our conversation into the next hour. We invite you in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about organ donation and transplant. Are you an organ donor? Why not? We'd really want to hear what your concerns are. Maybe it's because you've heard some myths that maybe your body will be damaged if you donate an organ. Maybe you think that your family's going to have to pay for it. These are not true. You know, the recipient of the organ will be taking on the cost of the donor's workup, hospital expenses for the donation, laboratory fees after the donation, all of these things. So if you're the donor, you don't have to pay those things. But you will be giving the gift of life to people who right now are dealing with the uncertainty. Give us a call if you got a question or comment, a story to tell us about organ donation, 210-614-8980. And Lupe has called in. Lupe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I have questions about eligibility for donors. Can you donate if you are on steroids? And can you donate if you are on biologic drugs?
Okay, Lupe, great question, a really good question. Let's go to Clarissa Thompson. She's a Senior Communications Coordinator for Texas Organ Sharing Alliance.
And thank you so much for considering being a donor, Lupe. I appreciate that. So, there's really no rule outs. A lot of people fear that maybe I'm too sick or too old to donate, but that really isn't the case. The most important thing is to sign up. And once you sign up, again, you lift that burden off your family. And at the time of your passing, our organization will do several testing to evaluate the condition of those organs to see what is viable for transplant. Currently, the only rollout is active cancer. But even then, if you're in remission 5 years or more, you can still be an organ donor. But even with active cancer, you still have the possibility to donate corneas. So again, there really isn't any rollout, and you never know how medical technology will be at the time of your passing. So sign up and consider saving lives.
So Michelle Ramirez, I mean, I can be HIV positive and still be an organ donor?
Yes, there's a New Hope Act, which allows you to register if you would like to be considered to be an organ donor. And there is now, through the HOPE Act, you can do HIV to HIV transplants.
Okay, so that's something to be considered. And Clarissa?
Yeah, in fact, Texas Organ Sharing Alliance actually did one of the first HIV HOPE Act donors here in Texas back in 2016. And it was successful. We were able to transplant livers, the liver and two kidneys. And so it does work. And that's really what the message is about donation. Anyone can sign up. Anyone can do it. Any age can do it. I think, April, you were saying that you have little ones that have signed up.
Yes. You know, when we were desperately waiting for that phone call, they attended an event at University Hospital where they could register to sign up. And they said, Mom, can I do it? And of course I said yes, because we're on the receiving end. But their moment of feeling heroic and making that decision on their own was very special.
And so, their ages?
My daughter is 11 and my son is 9. They were actually 7 and 9 when they did it.
So, yeah. And they were just proud as punch when they signed up.
Oh, yeah. And actually, my daughter had a birthday party promoting that. They're proud to tell their friends and go to school and tell them that, you know, I could be a hero should this tragedy happen. But
okay, let me go to the phone lines, and this is Jerry. Jerry, welcome to The Source, sir. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Y'all said a couple of times that you're dead, you don't need your organs anymore. So I'm not the first person to wonder if you need all your pieces and parts in the afterlife. So I was wondering, how do you address that? And I'm not trying to be a wise guy.
No, sir. I totally respect your point of view, and thank you for calling in. So there are religious concerns, and so and this is something that has been so Clarissa mm-hmm. Thompson.
So actually, the second most common reason people don't sign up is they think it's against their religion. And actually, every religion sees it as an act of kindness. In fact, if you go to TOSA's website, TOSA1.org, we have all the faith statements on our website where people can look up their faith statement and also speak to their faith leaders to see what the stance is. But even the Pope signed a card saying that it's an act of kindness, an act of love. Many faiths believe you're going to get a new body when you go to heaven, so why do you need the old one? I know mine's going to be like 5'9", 120, look a lot better, you know. But no, all pun aside, it's a great gift to give. You still can have an open casket even when you donate organs, tissue, and corneas.
But so I just want to go over these points here because they seem pretty significant. So Jerry's concerns were about, you know, religious concerns, you know, mm-hmm. who's like, you know, and we have faith leaders like popes and other, and they're saying you don't, that's not a barrier, that's just not, but if you do feel that way and you feel strongly about it, then, you know, go with peace mm-hmm. and you live your life, but you know, think about that. Go turn to your leaders and see what they tell you.
Correct. And we have, again, those faith statements on the website, donatelifetexas.org or tosa1.org. But really, we're not here to force people to say yes or no. We just want people to know the facts, and hopefully more people
right.
will
sign
up.
Right. We don't want to guilt people or mm-hmm. judge people into doing anything. We just want them to consider all of the options and get informed. And Michelle Ramirez with Donate Life Texas, you wanted to add?
Every November, we have what's called Donor Sabbath. and we devote educating and empowering faith leaders, and then they can apply their own faith traditions to that information. And so Donor Sabbath is a month when many faith communities are informed. We reach out to them, let them know information, dispel any myths that are there. But as Clarissa stated, all major religions have been supportive of donation.
All right, got a lot of callers here. Bonnie is on the line. Bonnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I have one question was already answered, and the second question is, I'm an organ donor, but how can I be assured that my organs will go to another person and not for research?
All right, Bonnie, thank you for that question. And so how do you do that? Who wants to answer that? Michelle?
Yes. So all organs are designated for transplant only. First and foremost, and if you're not a candidate for a transplant, then you're designated for research. You know, you can also decline that. And at the website.
So I can make that clear in my, that this is for a donor to provide to somebody, and it's not going to end up in a jar of formaldehyde on a shelf somewhere.
It's not going to end up for research. It's not going to end up for education should you choose not to.
Now, well, let's talk about, Bonnie didn't want to go to research, but research is also how they come up with life-saving techniques all the time. Mm-hmm. So, Bonnie, we're cool, you know, but if people want to allow that, then that's good too, right?
Yeah, it's a great thing. Research, for example, the islet cells in the pancreas, if the pancreas doesn't have a home in another person, we're able to send those cells off for research, which helps with diabetes research, which is, of course, a big epidemic in our area. So they can consent to that as well. So what happens is when the organ procurement organization for organ donation specifically approach a donor family, we will do a med-sol history and talk to the next of kin to get that medical information and let them know about the different opportunities that their loved one already signed up for, or if the loved one did not sign up for the registry, we will discuss that with the family and gain consent and let them know the different options they have, even a directed donation.
Okay, but we know that they're doing research on stem cells and all sorts of stuff all the time. They need material to work with. They need tissues. This is how they're going to come up with the next big regenerative medicine breakthrough, is through having the material to work with. So that's something to consider as well, how you can also be paying it forward in life. Bruce is on the line. Bruce, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a cornea condition called keratoconus, and it slowly distorts the shape of your cornea until basically at the point that I got where I could not see out of one of my eyes anymore. And only solution at that point is a cornea transplant. Luckily, I was able to get a cornea transplant just in this March, and now vision hasn't completely corrected yet. They still have to get some stitches removed next month, but at the rate it's going, the vision's already better than the no vision I had previously, and it's getting close to my the other eye. So, yeah, basically, it gave me the gift of sight. So just encouragement for people, yes, please do donate corneas. They can really make a major difference in people's lives.
All right. Thank you so much, Bruce. I'm going to go to another caller because we get a lot of calls. And Matt, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So I was interested in becoming an organ donor. However, I had heard bad instances of people's organs being rejected after they were found out to be gay men. So I'm wondering if there's a prohibition on gay men donating organs, or if there's not a general prohibition, do individual entities such as hospitals have the discretion to reject those organs simply because of somebody's sexuality?
So when you say rejected, do you mean like the organ itself physically being rejected, or do you mean that there are people out there who say, I don't want no gay organ in me?
Not necessarily the people who would receive them, but the hospital who would, I suppose, harvest them after the person passes.
Okay, so medically rejected. Got that. All right. And so who wants to respond to that? Oh, Clarissa, go ahead.
A great question. So again, with the HOPE Act, we're going to be at the Pride event this weekend. With the HOPE Act, that allowed for individuals, no matter their sexuality, to be able to donate. When a hospital gets an opportunity to receive an organ, because TOSA will offer out an organ for transplant, they are not looking to see you know, what the sexuality or what the preferences of that person. What they're looking at is, can this organ save lives? Is it in a proper condition to save lives and give the best conditioned organ to the recipient? So anyone can sign up. There's not really that discrimination there.
But there's no prohibition on anyone particular. So April?
You know, I'd like to chime in on that. When my son was waiting for his liver, one of the things that was brought up to us in another region was taking high-risk organs. And they told us, here's your options. You don't get the organ and you die, or you take a high-risk organ, and that could be from someone who's in prison, recent, you know, they do home tattooing, different things that could put you at risk of Hep B or anything for that matter. And they told us if some people are offered these and you can pass on the opportunity or you can accept it. And they highly encouraged us, and we would have accepted a high-risk organ because it's either that or you die, you
right.
know? So,
okay. But to the point to the question was that there is no prohibition on that type of organ. So it's going to take a break. We'll be right back. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about organ donations and transplants, talking about some of the myths that are out there. One myth is that only wealthy patients receive transplants. In fact, any patient who is registered with the National Deceased Donor Waiting List may receive a transplant. This list is maintained by the Department of Health through a very tight network and as oversight, and doctors are involved to make sure that this is not just going to healthy people, it goes to people who need them the most. If you've got a question or comment about the organ donation program, how you can become an organ donor, if you have received one, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Carlos is on the air. Carlos, welcome to The Source. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I did want to speak about organ donation. It's really near and dear to my heart. I lost my brother-in-law about 5 years ago. He was waiting for a kidney, so we lost him to diabetes. My dad received 2 heart transplants, and we were able to have him for an additional 13 years. My nephew, 21 years old, donated his corneas after his loss of battle against cancer. So it can have, you know, organ donation is really near and dear to my heart. Everybody needs to do it, Hispanics especially.
All right, Carlos, thank you for the call. Talk about how families, how they feel when they find out that, like Carlos is talking about, how family members of his have passed on to others all of their organs and have provided. So talk about that, Clarissa.
Sure. Thank you, Carlos, for sharing that and sharing that legacy. So TOSA, we are the trained individuals that approach families about donation or inform them that their loved one made that consent to donate. And, you know, it's always a sign of relief if they hadn't been informed by their loved one that they had signed up already, a sign of relief that, yeah, of course, my loved one, of course, Clarissa wanted to donate. She was a giving person, and we're so glad she did that. And it lifts that burden off of them, and they have a sense of pride. And for those that we consent and say no to donation, if their loved one didn't sign up, we often hear back from those families saying, man, I wish I had known more, and I wish
I had
signed up.
Well, what about the follow-up? I mean, do the families get to hear the stories about how those donations changed other people's lives?
Yeah, that's a great point. All of our organizations offer different kinds of support. TOSA, for donor families, we have a donor family services program, and we do help if both the donor family and recipient both have to be in agreement to want to communicate with each other. We do have a program in place where they can write letters to one another. It only requires one letter be exchanged between the two parties, and then if they both are ready, they can sign consent release forms to me. And we've had many families meet their recipients, and I have one, many people know of Dr. Casey Ross, a few years ago, who was murder-suicide, as she ended up donating. And her mom was able to meet her daughter's lung recipient. Both of them volunteer with us and share. And it's just a beautiful relationship that they continue together.
We'll go back to the phones with Jim. And Jim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I donated my kidney to my son 12 years ago. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. It was just a wonderful feeling being able to see him come back to health. And both of us are doing fine. And you only need one kidney. So, you know, I would definitely recommend this for anybody out there that's listening, that it doesn't affect you that much. I was 50 when I donated. I'm 72 now, and I feel like I'm doing great, and he's doing great. So I just want to encourage.
All right, Jim, thank you. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Now let's go to Tracy. And Tracy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I was curious about the standard. I went to Germany as a teenager, and because we lived there, later as I wanted to donate blood, I was told I couldn't because of mad cow disease. And even now, at a later age, I'm still told that I can't. So I was wondering if the same standards are held for being an organ donor, because I did sign my driver's license to donate.
Tracy, great question. I thank you so much for that. If you're barred from donating blood, are you prohibited from donating an organ? April Medellin with the Transplants for Children, can you help us answer that question? Or you want to pass it to Michelle? Okay.
Thank you. Yes, we ask anyone that wants to be considered for organ, tissue, or cornea not to exclude themselves. You know, at the time of your death, that's, you know, we don't know when, how, what the circumstances surrounding that will be. And there are different requirements, and there will be a medical evaluation, a medical interview with your family to testing.
It seems pretty bizarre. We've got this prohibition on people who can't give blood because, you know, over a decade ago, they were in Europe during the mad cow scare. And, you know, she hadn't gone mad yet, you know, so, I mean, how bad could it be?
Well, many that are rejected as blood donors, and I can't speak to the requirements for blood donation, can still be considered for organ donation. And so we ask anyone that wants to be a donor to sign up and not to exclude themselves. You know, if they're, you know, autoimmune, for example, myself, you know, and I share this openly, you know, I may be ruled out for some forms of donation. I'm still registered because I want to be a donor. I may be able to be an organ donor, a cornea donor, maybe not a tissue donor, but I don't know when I'm gonna die, how I'm gonna die, and I don't know what will be available at that time.
Let's go to the phones again with Dustin. And Dustin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, if there was ever talks about incentivizing the public to donate, if, let's say, you donate and you opt in to be a donor, that if you're ever on the donor list, that you kind of take priority. I'm going to hang up now. Thank you so much.
All right, Dustin, thank you for that great call. And so if you are on the donor list, and something happens to you, and now you need an organ, does that impact your position on the wait list?
No. The national system that matches available donors, organs, you know, from those donors.
It's based solely on your needs.
It's based on blood type, but body size, how sick, the distance the donor is to the organ, the tissue type, and how long they've been on the waiting list. So, no. If they're a registered donor or they've been a donor before, race, income, gender, celebrity, social status are not part of the consideration at all.
Clarissa, do you want to add?
Well, anyone, again, can sign up to donate. We do, of course, not offer any kind of incentives because it is a gift. It's a donation. But there are other organizations separate from our organizations that do offer help to families, you know, with burial costs and things of that sort. And so we do definitely, if they want that information, we can help them, resource them out. And there's usually a social worker that's helping the family at the hospital that can also direct them to those kind of resources. But at this time, we, of course, cannot pay or compensate for any of the funerals. So it also doesn't delay the funeral arrangements. So when someone donates, we do the recovery, and then we do return their loved one to the family for any funeral arrangements they have made, whether that's cremation or viewing or what have you.
Got a question on Twitter from Nathan. He's asking about the impact of the higher rates of obesity on the organ supply. You know, people who have fatty livers and other issues, strained hearts with obesity, and we're seeing obesity rates skyrocket. Is that causing a problem in having fewer organs that we can work with, Clarissa?
I think the quality of anybody affects, you know, what they're able to donate. Of course, if you're healthy living, you're going to have healthier organs, and we definitely promote healthy living. We collaborate with different organizations that promote living healthy, so that way we have healthier organs to recover. So I would say, yes, obesity can affect, just as any other disease could affect the quality of the organ. But, you know, kidneys and livers are in such a demand. 80% of the people need kidneys here in our area that there is a fine line of what is healthy enough to go ahead and donate.
So the issue of brain death, so that's kind of complex for families. And you may have an individual in your family and something happened to them, a car accident or something. Now there's no brain activity, but they're on a respirator and people aren't really sure, is this person really dead? Can we, how do we, you know, cross the line and say yes and now we can harvest organs?
So the first thing is to understand the terminology. Very often you hear, perhaps on TV or what have you, oh, they kept that person on life support to harvest their organs. And that's incorrect, because when a person is considered for donation, every life-saving effort has already occurred. That person is on mechanical support because we have to keep oxygen going to those organs to keep them viable for transplant. And then we recover, not harvest, but recover those organs to place them in another home in another person. But also, the declaration of brain death is made by the hospital, by doctors who do not have access to the state registry to see that person is a donor. Even when they see it on the license, they cannot verify that. That's where TOSA, or the Organ Procurement Organization, steps in. We're separate. We're the ones that will come in and make sure also that that brain testing was done correctly. And we will be the ones to actually talk to the family about donation and do that recovery process.
So there are procedures in place, mm-hmm. and everything is tightly controlled. We have this brain death test that's performed by two doctors, and it's very precise, and they're able to tell you that the person is dead, even though their heart is beating because they're on the machines.
Correct.
And then we can move forward from there. I want to talk more about the what's happening this weekend at the Pride Festival. Lots of health opportunities. We should name that like a health festival, because lots of healthy activities there. One of them is you can get tested for HIV while you're there. It's a quick, easy test. Also, you can get your driver's license scanned, Michelle.
Yes. We will be at the health fair at the festival, and it starts at 11 o'clock at Crockett Park downtown. It'll be going through 7 o'clock, and then the Pride Parade starts at 9. So we will have a booth where you can come and get some information, register, and just come and say hello. Share your story with us.
Are more people registering, Clarissa? Are we seeing a positive trend? Or there's still a shortage, but...
Yeah, I mean, we are. I mean, 51% of Texans are registered here in Bexar County. We're right above that at 54%. And like I said, we're second in the nation as far as one of the fastest growing registries, considering we're a baby registry. We just started in 2006. But more and more people are saying yes, and that's great. But we still have, 46% that need to say yes. So come and join us.
Clarissa Thompson is the Senior Communications Coordinator for the Texas Organ Sharing Alliance. Michelle Ramirez is with the with Donate Life Texas. And April Medellin, a development manager for Transplants for Children. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.